morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about anti-Semitic flyers in Helena, the new Billings Airport, and rock climbing. It's Monday, September 30th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Consistently wet weather this month and the snowstorms over the weekend are dampening fire managers' hopes for large prescribed burns in the Flathead Valley this fall. Managers may have to wait until next season for some projects. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports funding for one major burn runs out this year.
The Flathead National Forest announced 13 proposed prescribed burns this year. The agency wants to begin burning 5 units near Whitefish Mountain Ski Resort. Portions of the over 900-acre Belton prescribed fire near West Glacier is also planned for this season, but the window to accomplish these large burns is closing, and this weekend's snowstorm certainly isn't helping. Both of those burns are multi-year projects, but one proposed burn that officials say can't wait is the 1,100-acre Lindy Ridge fire north of Sealy Lake. At a recent press event, Swan Lake District Fire Manager Brent Olson said the burn aims to protect structures near the Mission Mountain Wilderness.
Historically, fire has started in the Mission Mountains and, under those more extreme conditions, those years when fuels are exceptionally dry, will get itself established in the wilderness area and follow the prevailing wind going from west to east, bringing a high-intensity fire down into the valley bottom where values at risk are located.
But if fuels in the area don't dry up in the next couple of weeks, Olson says the forest may not be able to move forward with the project this year at all. And with recent rains, he says $70,000 worth of federal funding for the burn is being diverted to other projects. Those dollars will expire Monday if they're not used.
So this is a project that's in the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Project area, and this is the last year of 10 years of funding that we've gotten for this project.
If wet weather continues, Flathead National Forest fire managers may not be able to accomplish any larger burns, but smaller pile and slash burning projects will likely be able to move forward. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
The Montana Human Rights Network this week warned of anti-Semitic flyers showing up on doorsteps and car windshields in Helena. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
The material targeting Jewish people and Israel was dropped in neighborhoods near the state capitol building a week before the celebration of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. That's according to Rachel Carol Rivas with the Montana Human Rights Network. Rivas says the papers seen in Helena are similar to a series of anti-Semitic papers distributed in Missoula earlier this year. She says the cars and homes that received the flyers seem random. Rivas says the appearance of the material in Montana is sporadic, but the hate speech is part of a larger issue.
You know, what we've seen in the last few years, of course, is just generally an uptick in white supremacist, white nationalist activity in the state, and also the mainstreaming of those ideas.
In a statement from Montana Human Rights Network following the flyer's appearance in Helena, Rabbi Lori Franklin of Missoula Har Shalom called the action of spreading the material cowardly and destructive. Franklin wrote, quote, "Let's affirm the right of all Montanans to live in safety and in an environment of mutual acceptance and appreciation," unquote. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana's Missing Indigenous Persons Task Force met for a third time in Billings on Friday. Olivia Rheingold reports.
Cheryl Eagle came to the meeting Friday to make sure task force members address how meth and human trafficking might affect Montana's high rate of missing Indigenous people.
My brother was murdered 4 years ago in Butte, Montana. He was stabbed to death 7 times, and I believe it was over meth.
Eagle, a Blackfeet tribal member, says meth helps explain why Indigenous people go missing at rates that outpace their share of the state population. She was one of about 15 people who came to see the task force deliberate, including Melinda Limberhand, Hannah Harris's mom, and 2 officers with the police force at Montana State University Billings. The task force was created last legislative session to help address jurisdictional barriers and commission a missing persons database for cases on Montana reservations. On Friday, the task force discussed what kind of data to collect and who should be able to access it. They agreed they want law enforcement throughout the state to be notified when new entries are added. Local law enforcement wasn't required to attend Friday's meeting, but Eagle says,
shouldn't they be here? Yeah, it's not a requirement for law enforcement to attend this. And really, it should be.
Northern Cheyenne President Rina Lena Whiteman Pena has her own frustrations with law enforcement. She says she recently went to the march for Kay Sarah Stops Pretty Places, an Indigenous girl whose body was found last month shortly after her 18th birthday. This is how Pena felt when she saw the Hardin backyard she was found in.
That really made me angry.
She says the yard was close to the street and behind an inhabited house. It took 5 days for police to find Stops Pretty Places after her family says she disappeared. Pena says she hopes in the future law enforcement will take cases of missing Native Americans more seriously. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
The latest in a series of federal grants could help Billings increase its number of flights and attract new airlines. Kayla DeRoche reports.
Billings Logan International Airport began construction of its new terminal earlier this month. The project will increase the airport's 5 gates to 8. Chamber of Commerce CEO John Brewer says that could provide more flight options through existing airlines and open up flights to major destinations, like Billings did in 2017, when it established direct flights to Dallas. Brewer also says the 4 extra terminals could help Billings appeal to airlines that don't yet serve the city.
For us then to have that capacity at the gate to have the ability to knock on their door now gives us the chance to be in the game.
He says that could further support tourism in Billings. The city markets itself as Montana's trailhead, a jumping-off point into other areas. The airport estimates it'll take roughly $55 million to complete the expansion. This week, it was awarded another $2 million in funds from the Federal Aviation Administration. Airport Director Kevin Plone says they're still on phase 1 of 5 in the terminal expansion, with construction expected to wrap up in 2023. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Less than a year ago, industrial hemp was essentially an outlaw crop. Today, it's transformed into the wellspring of an emerging billion-dollar industry. The cannabis extract cannabidiol is a hemp byproduct, better known as CBD. Demand for CBD-infused products, such as bath salts, balms, and body bars, is through the roof. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien recently visited a Montana hemp processing facility that's transforming the tough, fibrous plant into liquid gold.
Chemical engineers are huddled around stainless steel lab equipment at the Sakati, Montana plant in Missoula. The team, clad in white lab coats, hairnets, and safety glasses, is monitoring the early stages of its hemp refining process. James Stevens is the facility's general manager.
So generally we're removing things like chlorophyll, which is the green color, because that creates an off taste or an off aroma depending on what's being used. And then what this also does is it concentrates the product. So the first step...
Stevens has had a whirlwind 2019. His year started as CEO of a small Missoula biotech firm called Blue Marble Biomaterials. The company produced natural compounds for the food, fragrance, and cosmetic industries. Its work eventually caught the attention of CBD manufacturer Sakati, which produces what are called broad-spectrum hemp extracts. The Austin, Texas-based company acquired Blue Marble this spring. James Stevens says Sakati's more than $40 million in capital is bankrolling the company's plant near the Missoula airport.
We grew from 11 to 42 employees in the last 3 months. And then what we're doing now is we're in the process of permitting and working with the local community on about a 10x scale up of our capacity at this location. And we're probably looking at doubling or tripling staff by early next year, if not the end of this year. So we could be looking at between 100 to 150 people needing to operate this facility at this location. location.
Steven says over 80% of his employees are Montanans who are now earning above average wages and benefits.
Everything from maintenance and facility and electrical work, like we just hired an electrician, all the way to scientists doing product formulation and product development and everything in between.
He credits the Montana University system for producing top-notch graduates in the engineering, chemistry, and agriculture fields.
My name is Brianna Pabst, and I'm a chemical engineer here at Sakati.
Women make up half Sakati, Montana's workforce. Pabst, a Great Falls native who graduated from Montana State University, describes her work as energizing.
It's an awesome facility to work in, just having that really strong female scientist group. It's a new industry, so there's new things to figure out, so it's really challenging every day, which keeps it interesting.
Sakati is aggressively scaling up operations, and officials are tight-lipped about the quantity of extracts and oils it's producing, as well as details about clients. Sakati Chief Revenue Officer Mark Elfenbein says only they're working with national CBD brands.
Where those brands are good at marketing and packaging and formulating, but still need a CBD ingredient partner, which is what we are. So as an example, we're currently in discussions with at least 5 of the top 10 CBD brands that are on store shelves today.
Sakati CEO Josh Epstein, a lawyer by training, is bullish on the emerging hemp economy.
Because it touches so many different industries here in the United States, agriculture, engineering, chemistry, that has the ability to ultimately from scratch, taking something that previously was a non-existent or a black market industry and making it a legitimate, credible industry that people are proud to be a part of.
And according to Sakati's Mark Elfenbein, the CBD boom is just beginning.
Industry projections show that by 2022, the U.S. industry is pegged to be in excess of $20 billion per year annual industry. 2 years ago, this was maybe a sub-$100 million industry to give you a sense of that growth. So we were at 100 million a few years ago. We're over a billion now, growing to 20 billion by 2022.
CBD proponents claim the compound can effectively treat everything from anxiety and depression to certain forms of cancer. Experts, however, caution more research is needed to back those claims. The Food and Drug Administration says CBD cannot be included in food and beverage products, but pressure is mounting on the agency to regulate CBD as a food additive and dietary supplement. Earlier this year, Sakati reps sat in on FDA meetings to discuss the issue. Again, CEO Josh Epstein.
You know, our position is we need to have an industry that's built upon good manufacturing practices, that's built upon consistent analytical capabilities of testing, and that's built upon clear labeling standards that consumers can digest and understand.
Sakati Montana's general manager, James Stevens, says hemp's potential overall impact on local ag cannot be understated.
This definitely has the ability to really blunt the negative impact of overseas trade and allow farmers, especially smaller family farms, where if they focus on high quality crop that's certified organic and doesn't use pesticides and doesn't use fertilizers and kind of go for the high end niche part of the component for this industry, I think it has the ability to add a strong kind of small family farm presence in the whole industry and really kind of strengthen Montana farms in general.
The nation's opioid addiction crisis has sparked renewed interest in the pain-easing properties of cannabis. The federal government recently announced it will spend $3 million to determine if the plant can help dull chronic pain. None of that money will be used to study THC, the ingredient that gets us high. Instead, 9 research grants are pegged for work on CBD and hundreds of other less familiar chemicals found in cannabis. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Once a niche sport, rock climbing is emerging as a cultural and economic force in the U.S. Award-winning documentaries and the inclusion of climbing in the 2020 Olympics have played a role, but so have opportunities to bring up the next generation of climbers. Rachel Kramer reports the Bozeman climbing team stood out at the national competition this summer and is preparing for its first of the season competition in Billings this week.
At the Spire Climbing Gym in Bozeman, teenagers walk up to a wall covered in colorful plastic holds. Some of them look like giant melted gumdrops. Others are little nubs just big enough for a toe or the tips of the climber's fingers. Since they're bouldering, the teens climb without ropes. Falling is part of the process, and each time it happens, a little cloud of chalk dust rises into the air.
Do your parents ever worry when they come to watch you at competitions?
My grandma does, more than anything. She'd prefer that I did ballet, but my parents don't worry too much.
17-year-old Ellie DeCola is one of the athletes on the Bozeman climbing team. This summer, the team sent 5 athletes to the Sport and Speed Youth National Championships in Pennsylvania. 10-year-old Wilson Whitley placed 2nd in his age group, earning him a spot on the USA Nationals team. Spire's head route setter and youth team coach Taylor Fragomeni says the sport's popularity has exploded in the last few years.
It used to be this like weird fringe sport, and now everyone knows that it's a thing. It's also just kind of fun community-wise, and the field of play is constantly changing. It's like not the same game every time. You're always on different routes and boulders that are challenging you in new and different ways. So that adaptability factor is really fun and unique as well.
Nearly 8 million people in the U.S. climbed at least once outside or in a gym in 2017, according to a report from the Outdoor Foundation. And the Climbing Business Journal reports the number of climbing gyms across the nation grew about 12% last year. Bozeman is part of that trend. Spire opened in 2004 and built an add-on in 2015. It plans to open a 2nd facility in 2020 to meet growing demand. Fragomeni says summer camps for kids and competitive teams have played a role in grooming the next generation of climbers. Aubrey Johnson took home 37th at the National Climbing Competition this summer. Fragomeni says Johnson just started her freshman year at the University of Utah and will try out for the college climbing team.
How do you coach for something that's so variable? It's not like track where it's like, well, run harder.
We try to really individualize based off of what each kid needs, especially on these higher level teams. Like, some people need to work on technique more and some need to work on strength more, and a lot of the undertones of it are mental too.
She says she and the other coaches try to help the athletes learn how to stay calm under pressure and have fun. A lot of the athletes say they enjoy both the mental and physical challenges of climbing. Some of them, like 14-year-old Claire Schaub, started climbing with their parents when they were kids.
What does it feel like when you're on the wall, getting some, you know, working on something that seems really challenging or tough?
It can be frustrating at times, but then when I like finally do it, I feel like a superhero. So it's pretty fun. I like the whole process.
Ben Browning, 17, says he likes climbing because it forces him to focus on that one hold or whatever challenge he's trying to overcome. Everything else just melts away.
Especially like comps, like you don't hear anything else around you because there's people cheering for you and cheering for other people that are also climbing, and you usually don't hear anything.
Browning says he moved from Utah to Bozeman this summer. It was the 2nd time he moved in 2 years.
I know, it's been nice because I can find a community wherever I move to.
14-year-old Clara Dombrowska also talked about the community aspect. She placed 31st in her age division at the national competition this summer.
Climbing is like a unique sport in general, but then like I get to meet so many people and go to so many like cool places. And I guess that's like why I've been doing it for so long.
The Bozeman climbing team will be competing in the Montana Bouldering Championships youth portion Saturday at Steep World Climbing Gym in Billings. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.